You all may be taking the week off, all right, this week, but I'm not.
Man, I'm 40.
The kids are playing their tail off, and the coaches are screwing it up.
You don't need to check your watch to know it.
It's time.
All right, welcome back to Targeting Week 9 preview, Nick. You look at the slate, and it does not look great. But every time we say that at this point of the season, we get the chaos weekend. So the question is, do we get the chaos weekend?
Kind of do, right?
I just think so, just because like this happens every year that we underestimate a slate.
Yeah, there are a couple games that I'm sure we're going to hit it on that I think the market, maybe not the market as much, or at least the smart parts of the market, but it depends. But I think like the recreational bettors and the casual college football fan, there are a few games that we're going to touch base on that I think they believe are foregone conclusions that I think could be closer than the market or experts think. So yeah, I think there's some potential for some chaos this week.
Addison, you are going to our game this week. What is the game plan for Madison?
I don't know yet. So yeah, I'm just going to go with the flow. You know, we've got all day. So 6:30 local kick. It's going to be cold. Be in the 30s probably by kickoff time. So yeah, we're just going to kind of see what Madison's all about. It'll be fun. Like I've been there before in the summer, and it's a nice college town. So it looked like a pretty good place to like tailgate and stuff. From what I remember, there were like houses like right across from the stadium. So I'm sure right around there is going to be pretty crazy on a game day, and, you know, go to bars and stuff. So, and we're going to be with Wisconsin people too. So they're going to know like where to go. Good. So I'm sure we'll check out all like the, you know, the Wisconsin's version of like little bar or outer in or whatever.
It's just, get some cheese curds.
Yeah. Yeah. I did last time I was up there too.
Wisconsinites are notoriously nice as well. So it probably sets up for a nice, polite, I mean, it's rowdy, but like, I think what you're alluding to, the tailgate scene, the bars, like you can strike up a nice conversation with the opposing fan and enjoy some brews and then
yeah,
enjoy the game. Although Steele might beg to differ, as he got into some stuff with some of the Wisconsin fans.
He was in Chicago, though.
True.
Yeah. The you know, in their native habitat. I mean, right. when I was there, that Wisconsin people, they're large people and they are nice.
Yeah, they are large. Very
like
large
big German people who can drink a lot.
Right. And run block.
Yeah.
Very well. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to winners and losers. Addison, I'm going to start with you. We have an all-time loser that we will get to. But first, can you just get the sign-stealing stuff out of the way and that, and we don't have to talk about it for the rest of the pod? And then there's one massive loser that we must discuss at length afterwards.
Yeah, all right. Well, yeah, we'll get the sign-stealing stuff out of the way because I have both fan bases on here for losers. Like, first of all, I'll start with our fans. Like I feel like we just sound really bitchy like about all this stuff, just using it as the excuse for losing the last couple years. Especially a couple years ago. I mean they were just better than us. I mean they bullied us. I mean I don't think you can just use make excuses, you know, with sign stealing for the reason they won that game. I mean, you know, you go back to 2018, 2019, we were beating them by like 30 points in those games. I think they could know all our plays and they still wouldn't have been able to to beat us. I mean, the gap is definitely closed. They've gotten better. We've gotten worse. You know, when they asked Kirby Smart about it, you know, he kind of just scoffed at it because, I mean, Georgia was way better than them and they just kicked their ass, you know, so it doesn't matter. If you're just better than them, that is the position that we used to be in this rivalry. And that's where I want to get back to. I don't want there to be any excuses. I don't want people to say that, you know, try to say that we actually won those games or try to make excuses for this year's game. Like, let's just beat them on the field this year. That's all I really care about. I mean, we've been in that position before, you know, when it comes to NCAA rules and stuff, you know, with the Tatgate thing. I mean, we all thought it was stupid, you know, we thought the rules were bullshit and all that, but I mean, you can't pick and choose which rules you want to matter. So, I mean, if that's how we thought back then, you know, we can't just like change our minds now when it comes to that kind of stuff. As far as Michigan's fans go, when we were beating them every year, they were just like, oh, well, we don't cheat like Ohio State does. We don't pay our players. We play by the rules. We have higher academic standards and all that. You know, we're just a, you know, they had this very elitist mindset, and that was their cope for losing to us every year. They acted like they were just like morally superior to everyone, and that they don't, you know, do the same kind of stuff that like every other school does. And, you know, it turns out they're just like every other school. So now they look pretty stupid. And also, you know, the sign stealing thing, I mean, it obviously happens everywhere to an extent. Michigan is just the dumbest to, you know, get caught and make it, I don't know, this obvious or whatever, and maybe like take it further than everyone else. But, you know, one last point, it seems like a lot of teams knew that this was going on. So why wouldn't you just counter that? I mean, it sets you up, you know, to like burn them with, you know, you change up your signs and then you run a play that they're not expecting. So yeah, that's it. I think I covered everything that needs to be covered there.
I think so. I think you covered it. Nick, you have anything else on this?
I mean, I guess we'll just see what transpires. I mean, there seems to be more and more coming out every day.
It does seem like there's more. So yeah.
I'm like 90% on board with what Addison said. I think that the only part that I could see you like somebody pushing back on is like Tatgate was not about trying to find a competitive edge. Whereas here it's like, yeah, maybe all the teams do it to some extent. Like, as far as by what I mean by doing it is like, I would be surprised if most all of the big boy schools don't scout in-person future opponents. But to go as far as to film the sidelines, create this very elaborate and deep scheme, apparently, I think that's where the coaches and a lot of the fans are a little upset. And I think I get it to some extent, but as Addison said, it's just, I don't know, I think it's hard to really have. It seems like it's pretty polarizing, but for me, it's like, it's kind of hard to have like a really definitive opinion on it until all of the facts come out. Cause right now you have so many different rumors from all the message boards and like people that claim they're in the know. And then you get these reports from whether it's ESPN, Yahoo, Washington Post, and they all seem to line up pretty well. And we haven't heard anything that's like been reported that's been necessarily denied or wrong yet, but yeah, I mean, I think Addison covered it pretty well. I as a fan, I just want to beat them on the field as well. I think knowing your opponent's plays, like on one hand, yeah, I think a team should counter it, but then you have some guys that are coming out saying like, well, some of our schemes, like some teams' offensive signals are not, it's not that easy to change them mid-season and just completely start over type of thing. Other teams, maybe it's a little bit easier. I guess we'll never know for sure because we're not on those teams, but I think you can see certain teams have like one picture or one word for a number for a play. You saw that with, for example, like I think with Cam Newton and Auburn, but then you have some other schemes that might be much more complex and elaborate and dependent on a signal system that maybe you can't change up so easily. So I don't know for sure, but what I do know is no matter if the other team has your signals or not, blocking and tackling is still the main part of the game. And that's what Michigan was better at than OSU for sure in 21. I still will go to my grave saying that last year was not close to that, but they did end up winning the game and deserving to win it. But it wasn't the same domination as I saw in 21. 21 was pure domination. I don't care if they had the signs or the signals or not.
It was just shitty defense by us. And I mean, yeah, that's on us. You know, that's all you can say about that.
Yeah. So we'll see what ultimately comes out of it. But yeah, both the fan bases are, I think in general, just they are, it's already getting a little tiresome and it's just not going anywhere anytime soon. I don't think, I mean, we'll see if the NCAA is not likely going to move on this, but I will be curious to see if the Big Ten decides to do anything because they, from what I've read and hearing, they seem pretty pissed that one of their premier brands is kind of embarrassing them and everybody in the conference. So maybe they'll move on it if they think they have enough evidence, but who knows?
I don't want this to result in any NCAA action because that would imply that the NCAA has power over such things, which I don't think it's any of their business.
NCAA can
but F off. Yeah. The funniest thing to me about all this is that the term elaborate scheme is going around and all I've seen is laminated pieces of paper in a 3-ring binder, which is not, it's pretty obvious to me.
A manifesto.
I think elaborate would be you were hacking some files that got you film that you couldn't otherwise which get.
There are rumors of that.
That would actually be the one thing that would piss me off.
To be candid, like when I first heard about it, I thought it was first overblown quite a bit. I thought the same as Addison. Like I think all teams have done this since you could like start doing it essentially. But there are two things that would make me pretty livid. One is the one that you mentioned, Tolman. If they had access to practice film or hacked into iPads, playbooks, death penalty. That's not acceptable to me. And then the other one, no
death penalty because we need to play them to beat them on the field. So
close to death penalty.
Death penalty is not an option here.
Close to death penalty. And then the other thing that I heard kind of recently that I don't know if it's 100% proven yet or not. Nobody knows with a lot of this stuff, but if they did help other teams to try to help make like the playoff opponents like better for them somehow, like I think helping like you're really messing with the integrity of the game at that point. Like that's just how I view it. So like that's where it starts to get pretty dicey for me. If you're talking about them just scouting their own future opponents ahead of time, like whatever, should they be using technology or doing what they're doing? Probably not. They probably should get a little nice slap on the wrist for that. But if it goes like deep enough to where you start seeing, yeah, like kind of more of what I was alluding to at the last two things, like that's bad. Like that's definitely, there's no debate or argument with that one. Like that's pretty bad. So we'll see what happens, but nothing proven with those two things, I think, yet.
Okay, Addison, help us get back on track. Back to losers. I'm going to cue you up for potential loser of the year candidate. What am I thinking of?
Iowa, Minnesota.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So that call, I mean, the call is definitely like up there for loser of the year. All right. So it was a great return. No one on the field, like Minnesota, another player stopped. No one was like protesting saying that like, oh, he called fair catch. Like go back and review that. They were reviewing whether he stepped out of bounds and then just decided to take matters into their own hands and just overturn that call, which had to have shocked everyone, like PJ Fleck included. Like they just come back and they're like, oh, it was a whatever they call it, like a illegal fair catch or whatever. Invalid fair catch. Yeah. No one saw that coming. And I mean, I've watched it a million times and I don't like it. Just, it looks like a thing that punt returners do all the time. Like his hand wasn't above his shoulders or anything. So it's like, it's not a fair catch signal. It just seemed like an insane call to make. If it's not noticeable on the field like that, I don't know why you're overturning that. That just is pretty mind blowing to me. But the rest of the game, like, I don't know, maybe Iowa was just being punished by the football gods. They didn't deserve to win. They had 127 yards of offense. So, I mean, they have to make the loser list as well, just because, I mean, their offense, it keeps getting worse and worse. So it's really bad. I mean, call was terrible. You know, Iowa really probably deserved to lose the game anyway, though. But, you know, with the total ended up, did it end up below 30? Or did it end up under 30? That's insane.
12 to 10 was the final. Yep.
But I mean, the total was below 30.
29 and a half.
I don't know if it closed below 30. I think it might have dipped down to there, and then maybe it came back up to 30 or 30 and a half. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It was never that game going over was like, you were never,
and there was no chance. There was no chance it was ever going over. Yeah. So yeah, just absolutely no offense in this game. Just basically defines the Big Ten West this year. UNC. I mean, I think a lot of people aren't surprised that they slipped up against an inferior team, you know, probably wondering when they were going to get exposed. But for it to happen against Carruthers was the big shock, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're one of the worst power five teams this year. Mm-hmm. They've been really bad. And then for a top 10 team to lose to a team that bad, I mean, clearly UNC was fraudulent. And yeah, I mean, I expect them to lose at some point, but just not that game. Like, it's a pretty bad way to blow your undefeated season.
Also notable, a trend is emerging. That game was on the CW. Yeah. Whatever game ends up on the CW ends up on crack. So more on that later. That's actually something to pay attention to from a betting angle, I believe. Okay. Is that it for you for losers, Addison?
Yeah.
All right. The only other one that I want to shout out is people happy that Quinn Ewers got injured because they think they'll get to see Arch. They're wrong. Murphy's going to be the guy, and we think they might actually be better with Murphy. So I'm excited to see that, but I think there are a lot of fans that are pissed off that he's not starting this week, and they're dumb. Nick?
It's funny how Addison went through his losers, because I had exactly what he had. The only thing I'll add to the invalid fair catch call is, to me, it's like, it would be like if you went to look. So they originally, from how I understand it, they went to look to see if he stepped out of bounds. So that'd be like going, let's say like on an offensive play, you look to see if a guy, you know, caught the ball or not. And then you notice there's a holding that wasn't called, and you're like, oh, you know what? The tackle was holding, so we're going to call holding as well. Like, I couldn't believe that they were even like allowed or able to make that call at that point, because it's like going back and saying, yeah, there's a penalty committed. So,
like, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, Minnesota probably deserved to win, but I deserved to win my bet because that punt return should have stood. And yeah. But I also listed Iowa is a loser just because the fact that they have to put themselves in a position of like comedy of errors to where like, oh, here we go with Iowa, like punt return wins them a game, because that's how Iowa does it. It's like turnovers and special teams to win games. It's so bad there. But yeah. And then I said Mac Brown. I mean, he just finds a way to lose games that he shouldn't, and it always blows their season. So I just had the same that he had.
Why don't you do winners then?
I got some winners.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I'll go quick. Couple of running backs, one of which is an interesting player that I've been kind of watching the last couple of weeks. But first guy we'll talk about is Ollie Gordon II for Oklahoma State. They had a nice win, I believe, on the road playing West Virginia. He had 282 yards. Oklahoma State's really been trending upwards the last few games, especially after they got off their bye week. Gundy's got them back to being pretty competitive. And then Sione Vaki for Utah. This is, I don't know if you guys have paid attention to him, but he is a starting safety for them. I think they realize that they've really lacked athleticism on offense, so they started playing him at running back a few weeks ago. Last week in their win against USC, he had 9 carries for 68 yards, 5 receptions for 149 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, he's really explosive. And then he had 2 tackles on defense. So, you know, we talk about Travis Hunter, like, this guy, I think from what I understand, Whittingham might start playing him less on defense. I think that's smart. Utah needs all the offense they can get, as we'll get to the big game breakdown with them soon. But yeah, so I had those two running backs. They both had really good days in pretty good wins for their teams.
Only winner I had was Bama's defense in the second half. That unit's starting to get back to like early aughts level. I'm starting to fear them again. I really like their really like some of the guys they have on the defensive line. Turner and Braswell, they can really get after guys. So it's a team that's not dead yet. I can still see them making the playoff, actually contending.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Azami.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Yeah, I had Utah as a winner. We'll talk about them more in a minute here, so I won't elaborate too much. I also had Marvin Harrison. We talked last week about him being, I thought he was a good bet for the Heisman.
Did you bet him?
I didn't, but I just threw it out there because,
yeah,
you know, I did.
I got an 80-1 ticket that has I took it on the, after his first reception.
Yeah.
I saw how much separation he had, and I was like, I think he's going to have a good day.
He tore him up last year too. But yeah, 75-1 or 80-1, like you said, before that game. And I'm just looking now, and he's up to 9-1 yeah. now. So, you know, another big game from him. If he continues to do that and Ohio State keeps winning, I mean, he's going to be right there. He's going to be one of the top contenders. I mean, he was behind McCord going into last week. He's blown past McCord now, which should have been the case already. Mm-hmm. I think just because McCord obviously hasn't, you know, he's very inconsistent. I think he has, you know, the physical ability, but just decision-making and accuracy, he's not consistent, especially in the first half of games, it has seemed like. Yeah, Marvin, obviously he's a guy that, you know, if we're going to have, a playoff type of season, I mean, he's going to be like the main guy we're relying on really offensively, especially this year.
Awesome. Nick, do we have fan questions this week?
Not this week.
Okay. Then let's get to the games. Big game preview. This is awesome. Oregon at Utah. Oregon favored by 6.5. Total is 47.5, Nick. Break it down for us.
Yeah, it got bet up. I think it opened 4 or 4.5 from what I recall when I looked at it earlier in the week. Oregon got quite a bit of steam. I mean, I think that's probably correct. The model makes it 6. I think that's probably a pretty good number. Utah is coming off of their two best offensive performances of the year against Cal and USC. Cal's defense, pretty decent. USC's not great at all. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say with a really weak data point like that. But Barnes is a lot healthier at quarterback now after their bye. I mentioned Vaki being one of the running backs in the room now, giving them a lot more explosion. So Utah is, I don't think, still even an average offense by any means, but it's definitely trending upwards to where, like, it's not a complete liability at this point. Oregon's defense is interesting. I think at times they've looked very good. In our opponent adjusted metrics, they grade out elite against the pass, above average against the run, not great, but pretty decent. There are some data points, though, that are, I don't know if I'd say concerning, but it shows that maybe they're not necessarily an elite unit. You can go back to the Texas Tech game. Washington, I'm not going to give them too much shit for that. Washington's going to put up yards and points against, well, most everybody, not our Sun Devils last week. But Penix got, you could tell he's not right now. We'll get to that maybe later, but he's hurt right now, I think. They gave a lot of yards to Cam Ward last week, but Washington State's built to really just, like, pass like that. Like, you're going to give up yards to them. It's a matter of keeping them out of the end zone, preventing maybe explosives. I think Oregon did a decent job of that. So on this side of the ball, I personally think Oregon does have a pretty decent edge. I'm curious to see if Utah is able to maybe take advantage of the fact that Oregon's not the most stout up front, but I do think this is one of the more talented front sevens that Utah's faced. And their O-line hasn't been really generating all that much push all year, albeit the last couple weeks. But I'll be curious to see if they can improve upon or even be, like, up to the level they've been the last 2 weeks, because then they have a chance to find some success. But I do think Oregon's going to likely win the battle on this side of the ball more often than not.
All right. I guess I'll go.
I was gonna say, does somebody want to go the other side? Usually, sorry. I mean, I can't.
Yeah. So,
you go.
Well, just to elaborate a little more on Utah from my winners list. I was hating on them at the beginning of the year. I mean, their offense really was garbage to start the year. And then, I mean, they had the bye, and then they're coming off two much better offensive performances. Nick mentioned some of the reasons. Barnes did look a lot better. I mean, he was playing USC as well, which helps. And they were able to bully them. We know USC is pretty soft still, but they've been starting to look more like a Utah team that you don't want to play. And their defense, especially up front, is they've been playing like typical, like, stout Utah defensively, I would say. So it's going to be a big test for them this week against Oregon, one of the best rushing teams in the country. But I just, after watching them last week, I have Utah, I'm buying Utah stock now all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the defense is still quite good. Oregon, so everyone this year, when they talk about these Pac-12 teams, they mention, like, Washington, SC's stock offensively has started to trend down a little bit. But I think when we broke down that Oregon-Washington game, we pointed out that Oregon is not the same offense as Washington as far as how they go about it. They're much more, I would say, methodical. Bo Nix's ADOT is like 6.5 yards. Penix's was like close to 12. So it's a lot of short controlled passing, getting your athletes in space, which it kind of reminds me of like what Penn State wants to be this year, except that Oregon's much more consistent up front as a unit generating push. And then they have better playmakers just period in space. So I'm kind of curious if Utah tries to take some of that away and force Oregon to maybe try to take more shots down the field. Do they try to take away just one? Like, do they try to take away just the run, or do they, are they going to try to get to Nix a little more often? Do they give Oregon the run? I'm curious to see what they do there. I still think slight edge maybe to Oregon, but it's a little bit closer to even, as Addison pointed out, that Utah's defense is definitely the best unit of the two units that we talked about. So as far as where the line's at now, I don't want anything to do with it at 6 or 6.5. It got up to 7 for a couple of days, and I thought I leaned pretty hard, like hard enough that I thought about taking Utah at 7. I do worry a little bit that the offense regresses a little facing a much more talented defense than they faced the last couple of weeks. But I get taking Utah, getting a touchdown in Rice Eccles. Like, they don't really lose there. Like, they've been outstanding at Rice Eccles the last like 3 to 5 years. Oregon early in the week, I think that's where you would have taken them, is at 4, 4.5. I think anything in between that and 7, though, I don't think there's really a reason to play it unless you look to play it live. I would actually lean under at the current number it's at, but no real strong opinion on this game, really, any way you look at it. Just hope to watch a good game, I guess.
So I haven't said much about this game because while it is our best ranked versus ranked matchup we have this week, I looked at it every which way, and I just couldn't find an edge to play it. So it is a pure no play to me.
I would take Utah. Nick, you said that we make it like 6.
That's what the model says. And I think that's reason. I mean, so like at this point in the year, the model will say something, and then it's like, well, you have to be able to, like, I think the data points, we're starting to weight those a little heavier as far as like when they play teams in the same weight class. So you got to make some of your own kind of like eye test or personal adjustments based on injury or whatnot. But when I dug into this, because it is the big game breakdown, like, I think 6 is pretty good. I don't really see a reason to move that line at all. So, yeah, I would say 6.
Well, I personally am giving Utah a little bit of a bump right now just because they're playing better and they're at home. One of the best home field advantages in the country.
I got that factored in, but I get the bump, though. I mean, I actually checked it. We have them tied for, I think it's 5th in home field advantage at 3.35 points. So we give them a really nice bump, but I get it though. They're trending upwards, and you could say the whole like Bo Nix on the road thing, but honestly, he's been pretty damn good this year, no matter which way you look at it. So
I think veteran Bo Nix actually neutralizes the home field advantage a little bit. I think he's at this point in his career, he is capable of handling it.
Yeah. And his offensive line is just way better than it ever was at Auburn. I really think that was a big part of it at Auburn. So, yeah, but I get it, Addison. I mean, Utah just doesn't really – they don't lose there. So, like, this is a very interesting game. I can definitely see both factions' arguments here.
Okay. Do you want to get to the quick hitters?
Yeah.
So, okay. So, two options here. We can go around and pick games. We can each go around and pick a game, or I have what I thought the quick hitter should be without telling you, and I can go in order of time slot, and you tell me if you want to talk about this game or not. How do you guys want to do this?
It seems like you put the work in, so let's just do that.
I just wrote down games and spreads, so
that's work, sir.
We'll see. We will see if I was correct on what the quick hitter should be. But
yeah,
first,
some games.
Okay, Oklahoma at Kansas. Kansas plus 9.5 at home. It's a total of 65. We interested?
Yeah.
We want to talk? Okay.
That's one of the ones I think should be a quick hitter, yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, this one's interesting because the model says Oklahoma minus 12.5. So at this point in the year, you don't typically see that much of a discrepancy. We see it a little bit more at the G5 schools, I think, but we've talked about Oklahoma a few times in this podcast, coming up into midseason here, where they're kind of, I don't like using the term necessarily metric darling, because it seems like we say that when we think somebody's more of a paper tiger, but Oklahoma in a lot of models is pretty high, and maybe it is a little inflated in the models. I think the reason though that this line has come off of 10 and you're seeing Kansas be the sharp side at this point, when I went back through it and I looked at all of Oklahoma's relevant data points, especially the last two games they've played, Texas and UCF, they had a lot of breakdowns in coverage, and they were piss poor tackling, and they've been a really good defensive unit most of the year. But then I went back through before their bye week. They had two or three more games where they had some piss poor tackling. The other team that was a relevant pass attack that they played, SMU, breakdowns in coverage. The score wasn't quite what ended up being in the final. Like, we talked about this a few pods ago. So I think that that's why you see some Kansas money, is that even though Daniels is out again, this is the same exact thing as last year. Bean has played a lot. He's definitely more erratic, but he does provide a good passing threat, especially down the field. And Kansas does have a lot of explosion in the run game. It's not overly consistent or efficient, but they design a lot of explosives to where if it's not there, then that's why you see a lack of efficiency, because they're more like high risk, high reward in that sense. So I think that the market believes that Kansas's offense can exploit some of the leaks that we are starting to maybe start to see in Oklahoma on defense. But if one of you guys wants to talk about the other side of the ball, that's where I can see why the model likes OU, because it's the same thing as last year. Kansas defense is bad.
They can't stop. The one thing that I want to try to find a bet on this game is, can I find some good rushing props for Oklahoma players? I don't know. Right. This is a metric mismatch here. You're talking about one of the worst defenses against the run versus Oklahoma. That's been metrically one of the best running teams. So give me some over on the rush totals, rushing yards totals.
Yeah, I'd probably go over on the point total too.
Yeah, I was thinking lean over. I also would lean Dylan Gabriel over on his rush yard props. Maybe not his pass as much, because if they kind of end up doing what Texas did, which is Texas, that's the only other thing too that holds me. I leaned Kansas at 10 and 10 and a half very early in the week. But then I saw what the model said, and I was like, I want to look into this more. And we've talked about this before, like trying to find a comparable data point. Texas is the next closest thing to Oklahoma that Kansas has played. If you look at Kansas' schedule, there's nobody that's really that close to them unless it's Texas. And Texas beat them 40-14, and honestly, it probably should have been like 63-10. Like, they really dominated that game. So that kind of held me off of it a little bit. I do think it's an interesting game to see if Oklahoma can kind of bounce back from a pretty like rough performance off of a bye. It made me really think that Oklahoma might not be like really a national title contender, but definitely still a Big 12 contender, certainly. But I want to see how they handle this game on the road.
They were getting shredded by John Reese Plumlee, who is not he's a running quarterback. He's not going to shred teams. So concerning there.
Yeah.
Okay. The next one is another kind of, I don't know, this is kind of an uninspiring ranked versus ranked, but I figured we'd do it. Duke at Louisville. Louisville favored by 4.5. The total is 46. You guys got anything on this one?
No.
I mean, the only thing I'll say about this game is I would lean Louisville only because I don't, even if Leonard is ruled in to play, I watched him last week. He shouldn't have been playing in that game. He's not a great passer by any stretch of the imagination. Like, I think he's a good quarterback, but his legs make up a lot of what makes him good. And if he's got a bum ankle and he rolls it up again, the kid that's behind him is not ready to play big. Like, he's not ready to play college football. He's not ready to be a quarterback like we talk about with Dante Moore at UCLA. Like, they're not ready yet. So I would lean Louisville, but I don't love that it's at 4.5 now. Like, I would have loved to grab Louisville at -3 when it was, some books had that early in the week. If Leonard's playing though, and you like Duke, I think that now might be the time to start thinking about Duke. That's how close it is. But otherwise, I don't want to get into schematic stuff because I don't care about the game as much. That's just where I would lean. Like, that's where you can tell where the market's at. If you're making me pick a side, I think I would actually take Louisville though.
Okay.
I don't like that game. That's a very uninteresting ranked matchup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know. Duke is, I'll give them this. They're hashtag tough. this year. So I do like Duke. Even I don't know. Leonard, as Nick said, does matter a massive amount to them. But
yeah, probably close to a touchdown.
I'm still a Louisville hater though this year. So I don't. I think Duke can beat them without Leonard. So I mean, that's just the way I would lean. I don't really have, you know, a lot of thoughts on that game.
A more, how about a more interesting game? We'll go to the 3:30 slates. I mean, larger spread, but the Georgia Florida game is always one that we like to talk about. Georgia favored by 14.5. The total is 47.
Yeah. I think when I alluded to, I'll be a little bit careful in saying this. When I alluded to possibly there being some chaos this week, this is one of the games that I was talking about where, or kind of hinting at that, yes, it is a 14.5 point spread. We have a total below 50, though, so that's kind of interesting. And Georgia's obviously without Bowers now. Both teams are off a bye. But Beck really started to come on the last, I think, few games before the bye. Georgia, I alluded to this also early in the season, they, and not an excuse necessarily when they haven't looked good in a lot of their games, minus really just the Kentucky game. I think that honestly just showed that Kentucky's not really that good of a team. But as Addison and I pointed out with that breakdown that week, it was perfect. Like, Georgia's just the worst matchup for Kentucky ever. But anyway, Georgia, though, I think was a little bit, quite a bit more banged up than the average team at that point. They're getting much healthier at a lot of positions. At the same time, Florida is kind of interesting because they look really bad at times, and then there are times where they look pretty damn competitive. The offense has actually been, for us, it's actually graded out pretty well, but they're a little bit handicapped in what, like, a little handcuffed in what they do, rather. Like, Mertz is, it's very similar to when we talked about Oregon and Penn State. Florida's not pushing the ball down the field because their offensive line is really bad. But Mertz, credit to him, has been really good in the short controlled passing game. And that's helped with the running game a little bit. That's what Florida wants to do under Napier. Tolman, I got to give your boy credit. Like, I really think he's coaching up the hell out of that offense because they really lack talent. And the offensive line is worse than Ohio State's. So I do give him credit. Like, the fact that you have Mertz behind that O-line with not a lot around him, Mertz has actually graded out really well this year, albeit, like I said, not really taking a lot of risks. I think he's really honestly played as well as he could. And Napier and that offensive staff put them in a good situation. So, interesting thing on that side of the ball is Georgia, they dare you to run it into a six-man box and take a lot of the checkdowns. Like, Kirby has never switched what he does on defense. They always go with, like, six guys in the box because they're able to. Their defensive linemen are that good that they control the game. They don't need to add another guy into the box. So that kind of plays into what Florida wants to do a little bit, though. Like, it gives them a little bit more room to work with the short passing game, a lot of play action. It's a lot of window dressing when you see them play, and that tends to give Georgia some problems. If you, I'm not saying that these offenses are anywhere close to each other, but if you do go back and watch the OSU game in the playoff, OSU showed a lot of different motions, really did things that give Georgia a little bit of fits, and not seeing Florida can necessarily replicate that, but I think that it does play into what, like, if Georgia did want to go like eight guys in the box and get more aggressive, I think that's where Florida could have problems. So, but, and I would say, like, why would, I would think that's what Kirby would want to do, but he does not go away from what he does. So that's why I think that there's a little bit of a chance for Florida to have some success actually on offense. The other side, their defense has been pretty bad this year. And the only thing I took in this game, Tolman, is I took over on Beck's passing yards. I also took the over on Mertz's passing yards, but I don't want much to do with the line. The model makes it exactly 14.5. When I look at projected total, it's right on where it's at. I don't really have a feel on that either. Maybe because of the pass yards, I guess you could say lean over, but the tempos are kind of not really there for me to think that this is going to be a, there's not a lot of explosives, I think, without Bowers, and Florida doesn't really create much of those either. So I think both the quarterbacks will get their yards, but I kind of see this game lining up exactly where the market thinks. I think Georgia's going to be around a 14-point W, and I think it's going to be not all that exciting. But I wouldn't be shocked if Florida made this a little bit uncomfortable for longer than the casual fan actually thinks.
The, what the numbers are telling you is got a great opportunity for an exact score prediction.
Yeah.
Georgia 31, Florida State, Florida 17. Oh my God. Florida's no fly zone for me because I reviewed their Utah game, their Tennessee game, their Kentucky game. They're just wildly inconsistent. So yeah. Ceiling is high variance. Ceiling is kind of high. I don't know.
Floor is pretty low. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what we're getting. So, 31 to 17 is, I'll come back with what those specific odds are. And Addison, if you got any more on this, go for it. If not, I mean, Tennessee and Kentucky are playing. So that's another one kind of in this family of what are between Florida, Tennessee, and Kentucky, what are these teams?
I don't know. Final thoughts on this game. I am interested in it. I mean, this has been a series where weird things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, chaos potential. I agree with you guys that Florida is really hard to gauge. I mean, they've looked really bad at times, mm-hmm. but Mertz has been surprisingly good this year. Yeah. So I gotta give him that. You know, Georgia, I mean, they had the Kentucky game, which, you know, they bounced back after struggling against Auburn. And then, I mean, against Vandy, yeah, I mean, they really did dominate that game. And it was, you know, the score was probably closer than really, like, you know, if you actually look at the stats, than it should have been. But they still, you know, Georgia shouldn't be messing around with Vandy. They're not consistently playing at the same level they had been at. I mean, so there's still some vulnerability there.
Yeah, I think there's two ways to look at it that you could argue both. One is that Georgia has not been covering this year, and especially against teams that are kind of in Florida's weight class. Like South Carolina is really similar to Florida, and Rattler was able to do some stuff against them. Maybe Mertz can do a lot of the same. Not saying they're the same level of player, but I just think that it's the same level of talent on that side. And so you could look at it that way and say, well, Georgia hasn't been covering. They've been dicking around with teams in the same weight class. At the same time, you could potentially say that you're buying Georgia at what is probably their floor. I don't think they're much worse than what the market thinks they are now. But like you guys said, like I mentioned a few times, like Florida is just so Jekyll and Hyde. Like that's, I'd rather just take advantage of what I think are props that are slightly off and not really care about the side or the total.
31 to 17 prop is 80 to 1. So
it's not bad. Might have to play
it. It also looked like the prop with the, highest odds.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the highest or lowest? I'm not, you know what I mean? It had the best odds. So
shortest odds. Yeah. Syracuse also is dead, by the way. We're watching, I got Virginia Tech Syracuse on live, and like Vaught Tech started to trend up a little bit, but like Syracuse, the last few games, like this might be like a pure fade team the rest of the year. Like they don't have the depth. I don't know. Like they're just bad. They've also burned me a couple times, so I just hate them. But I just want to point that out. A possible, we find teams late, like in midseason, that are just pure play on teams, and then teams that are pure fade. Syracuse is a pure fade at this point. There's no way you can back them.
Hmm. Okay, Addison, you got anything on Tennessee at Kentucky? Tennessee favored by 3.5. This total's 51.5.
No.
No.
These teams are irrelevant to me now.
Yeah, they kind of are. Nick, feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, from the betting angle, I think it's, again, one of those ones where, like, if you like Tennessee, you probably would play them at 3. If you like Kentucky, you probably play them at 4.5. I don't like either. I think they're both too inconsistent. I took Leary under on his pass yards. That's the only play I have in this game. I think it was like 211.5. I project that to be more like 201.5. And he hasn't cleared 180 the last few games. He's had a couple games where he's been under 100. I think, like, I just, Tennessee actually, like, the one thing about them that's been relatively consistent is their defense has actually been pretty damn good this year. So that's the only thing I would look at. If I had to play it, I would probably play Tennessee because I think Kentucky's a little bit fraudulent.
Okay. Addison, guys, I had our game written down as the last quick hitter. I don't know if you guys wanted to talk about that at all. Obviously, we're not betting it, but if you have something on your mind or you're concerned about going into Madison, now's the time.
Yeah, the only thing I'll go real quick just because I'll let Addison take most of it just because he's going to be there. And so we got to give him his deserved time since he's supporting the team in person. But the only thing I'll say is I had this game circled in my mind as the potential letdown spot. I mean, I knew that if we beat Penn State, which was likely to happen, then, you know, these young kids are going to be, we see it every year, almost every week. There's something like this where these kids are very on a very big high, like emotional roller coaster. They're at the top of the hill now. And just to add to that, there's no way that they can really completely ignore the Michigan stuff that's going on. They feel, I think, more directly involved in it just due to the fact that their losses against them are magnified. So there's some distractions. I would think that the staff is hopefully keeping them in check, but to go along with the fact that you would think that Fickell is going to be pretty up for this game as well. The only thing I'll say, like X's and O's wise, as long as McCord's done a okay job of this year, but he has had a lot of turnover where he plays. I think as long as OSU takes care of the football, they're a lot healthier on offense going into this game. It was announced that Henderson's definitely playing. I believe Abuka's back. Wisconsin's defense is pretty solid as we expected it to be this year, but I don't think they have the horses on offense to really make this too much of a threat. But I have a feeling that this could be a little uncomfortable going early on into the second half. I think OSU will be okay going into the fourth quarter, but I see a lot of talking heads saying OSU's going to easily cover in this game. I honestly, if I wasn't a fan, I think this is actually a spot to play Wisconsin at 14.5. I just, with OSU's inconsistencies on offense, I think they're going to suffocate Wisconsin, but I just think it's a letdown spot where you could see kind of an uncomfortable 10 to 14 point victory.
Yeah. I mean, I see it very much the same way that, that Nick does. I mean, this is an Ohio State team this year that you really don't expect them to just blow away these like teams that
are all right.
Say Wisconsin. Yeah, they're not great, but they're not bad. I mean, especially
like,
going
they're in
there
the same
for
weight class
game.
As Maryland.
Yeah, a team that we struggled with for a half. Right. Actually, right. Like in the first half of that game, I was like, we're going to lose this game. Yeah. And that's the kind of game that I worry about is just like, you know, we have struggled early in several games now. And like, if we keep doing that, then yeah, it'll be, you know, it could be uncomfortable in the second half. I mean, we have much better players than them. So at some point I expect us to pull away, but, you know, still solid defense, not up to what Wisconsin has been, you know, the last few years, but still good enough to, you know, give us problems if we don't come out sharp. You know, offensively for Wisconsin, they've got a quarterback who's only making his third start ever, I believe. So I think it's going to be really hard for them to really find anything offensively, you know, especially since the OSU defense has been playing very well this year. But like Nick said, I'm sure Luke Fickell has been thinking about this game in particular. You know, this one has been circled for him. It's probably the biggest game of the season for him. So, and it'll be rowdy. Really looking forward to, you know, experiencing the atmosphere tomorrow. Glad that it's a night game. I think that'll really add to it. So yeah, it is a good spot to pick against us. And like Nick said, coming off of the Penn State game, going to Wisconsin is a tricky spot, I think.
Yeah, I think the moments where teams have moved the ball against us was, or at least recently, was Talia and with those kind of 50-50 balls. I think you kind of need a good quarterback receiver combo to actually move the ball on us. I mean, we saw Purdue was not able to do that. We saw Penn State was definitely not able to do that. So just looking at Wisconsin's roster, who are the guys that are going to make an explosive play against us? I don't see it. Are they going to hand the ball off to Braylon Allen 30 times?
Yeah, I mean, the last
they're gonna have to, yeah, they're gonna have to just like play ball control and play good defense.
Yeah, the last I checked, we had Wisconsin's adjusted pass EPA in the 90s. I mean, and that was mostly baked in with Mordecai in the game, who he's not playing, obviously. He wasn't good, but the backup's not, he's worse. So, I mean,
Locke has been like completing 50% of his passes since he came in. So,
right. And so, I think, Tolman, to answer your question, yeah, I think Wisconsin's going to try to go with the high variance route as far as, I'm not talking about like how they call plays, but like if you can shorten the length of the game by just running it and just grinding clock, then you create more high variance results. Because if there's more possessions for the superior talented team, then they usually are going to win more often than not. So I think they're going to try to pound it. The problem is you're going to have a lot of three and outs then, and you're going to put Locke in like third and eight every other, you know, series of downs that they get. And that's when you get turnover potential. So that's where you can maybe make the argument that you like OSU as a side. But I think that, yeah, I just see OSU having some of their own struggles, just like we said, post Penn State letdown, offensive inconsistencies with McCord, in the run game as well. But I think that they're going to be very suffocating on defense. So I think Addison will get to see a grinded out solid W, just get out of there healthy, hopefully, and let's just move on from it. And hopefully we do improve. Hopefully McCord adds a little bit of consistency. I'm also curious to see. So I do want to point out real quick that I think we could have mentioned Ryan Day as a winner. Honestly, I think he's been getting a lot of shit over the last couple of years. And I thought that against Penn State, he really schemed Marv open a lot. Like, he put him in the slot a lot. Penn State would roll coverage to his side, and then they would run a lot of route concepts against the grain, against that, so to speak. So I think he's doing a really good job of putting his best player in a position to make plays. I am curious to see, though, that if defenses try to completely eliminate him somehow, can McCord step up and get the ball to these other guys? And like I said before, I think in the Notre Dame game, you saw that there were flashes of that with Abuka and Stover, but I am curious to see how Fickell wants to play this, because I don't see how you really single up Marv now at any point when it's just pretty clear that that's, and we've been calling for that. Like, I don't care if it's predictable. I want to throw the ball to our best player because that's the best option we have in offense right now.
The one thing that I want to see this weekend is Travion play, get hit, get up, and get hit again.
Yeah.
Can you survive two hits?
Mm-hmm. Would love to see us throw it to him. Just saying.
He needs to, for all the talk about the team being tough, he needs to
find a sack.
He needs to show something, or else I'm on the verge of having seen enough.
I think that's what the fan base is thinking. I generally don't, I don't love to, I feel like I find myself disagreeing with the fan base quite a bit, just because I don't think they really understand, but like we do. But I agree with them on this one. I don't see how you can continue to support him as like the starter when he's just never available. That's a position that you have to be tough at. And you hear a lot of people calling for Dallin Hayden. He looks good when he plays. And I've said for a few weeks now, behind this particular offensive line, I think he might be a better fit. Now, having said that, I agree with you, Tolman, that I want Henderson to be in there and be healthy, because when you have struggles, when you struggle to move the chains efficiently, which we never have had that problem the last like 5-6 years, essentially, maybe even going back longer than that, this is the hardest time that I've seen us have trying to move the chains and be efficient. But we have explosives, and against the better teams, you need that. And Henderson's one of the guys that can do that. Like, he was big in the Notre Dame game in that sense. So I hope he's healthy. I hope we use him the right way, get him in the space. But I would like to see Hayden probably get some more run and see what happens with that.
Great.
He can't protect the passer worth a shit, but who if it's predictable,
that's why he doesn't play, is they don't, I know, think he but can like, pass protect.
Chip and Chop were in there last week and they both whiffed huge and got McCord killed also. So like, if they're not going to do their job,
how bad is he that he's not
playing?
Yeah,
he must be horrible at it from what I understand. Now, he literally does not play specifically because of that, and Dace said that. So I get that. And protecting McCord is pretty important right now because Brown is not playing, and you'd have to go to the Dakota boy, which would be interesting. And there are rumors of him getting that red zone package. That's interesting to me that that's going to be his first action in the most important part of the field. We've talked about that a little bit, even with Brown. It's a little risky. It's interesting.
Yeah, there's also rumors of Jack Sawyer and or Caden Curry getting some action at that.
Yeah, Sawyer
as the red
told
zone QB.
He told the media that he told Day he's available to throw it out of that package as well.
Yeah,
number cool. 33.
He is number 33.
Did we miss? Those are all the quick hitters that I had written down. Did we miss any? And move on to bets, or what do you guys think?
I think we covered everything. Yeah.
I mean, so when we get to bets, the first one that I want to bring up is these games on the CW are getting wonky, and we've got a weird number like Clemson -9 at NC State.
Yeah.
Wait, that's the CW game?
Yeah, it's funny that
money's in. Oh, money, dude. I have NC State plus 10. Perfect.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
I mean,
it was on CW.
It's 9.5 now. Yeah. But I'm still taking NC State plus the points all day.
It's
the CW special, the weird things are gonna happen. So
yeah, and like it's so silly because NC State is so bad on offense, but can you really justify laying that number with Clemson on the road right now? They just had another heartbreaking loss. Dabo threw Klubnik under the bus in the postgame presser, and you just have a team that's just not overly consistent or explosive on offense, and Clemson and NC State's defense is still pretty damn solid. So, like, they play them tough in Carter-Finley always. This is NC State's Super Bowl. Clemson, literally all their hopes and dreams are done now after that loss to Miami. So, Tolman, the added CW factor, I would add a point to it now. Like, that's to the spread, like CW factor, man. So yeah, this is one of the ones that I saw early in the week, and I was like, this just screams NC State to me. It's a plug your nose. Hopefully they grind it out and they're gonna get their asses suffocated on offense, but hopefully they lose like an ugly game by like 3 or win.
Another kind of fun situational betting game that I got. So these are my two best of the week. Give me I'm not sure if it's available now, but give me the Oregon State Arizona game to go over 55.5. That's your Pac-12 after dark game. You've got DJU that's playing a lot better than what I believe the market perceives of him. And a leaky Arizona secondary, and but Arizona's been competitive. I mean, they've put up points against the good teams that they've played. So I expect this to be like kind of a close shootout type game that'll keep us up into the night. So give me the over in this one. 55.5 is what I got it at. I'm only seeing 56 though.
If you like it at 55.5, 56 is fine. That's not a key number. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm seeing 56.5, 57. You could go Oregon State team total over 30.5 if you like that number better.
Yeah, I mean, I guess 56 is like it's an okay number. But like, I guess the only thing I'm curious about in that game is, so Delora's healthy now, but they really should roll with Fifita. Like, I hope they do, because I was leaning Arizona this whole week. If they would play Fifita, but I kind of lean, the more I dug into it, the more I kind of like Oregon State. I actually, Tolman, if you have more, I'll let you go because I don't want to talk too much more about that one. But
no, that's
I actually
it. No, I okay. Those are my over in that game and NC State. Those are my two best bets.
Yeah, I like NC State a lot. My official best bet of the week, which has not got off to the greatest start this year, but that's okay. We're gonna finish winning. I actually like Maryland a lot this week, coming off the bye, going to Northwestern, where Northwestern's really bad. Maryland has played three teams that I would define being in the same weight class as Northwestern that they've dominated. That's Indiana, Virginia, and there's one other that I'm honestly missing off the top of my head. There is one team that they screwed up against, and that's Illinois, and I would consider them in the same weight class as well. The only thing about that, though, that was an obvious letdown spot after they had really, I think in their minds, they felt like they let the OSU game slip away from them. I think that was a very predictable spot for a Loxley-led team to honestly blow it. They're off the bye now, though. I think they're hungry for a W against a team that has literally no home field advantage. Yes, it's sleepy Evanston, but Maryland tends to dominate inferior competition and then get dominated by teams that should dominate them. So I know it's on the road. I know Maryland has Penn State on deck, but I think coming off the bye, they should be pretty focused, and I like them to pretty comfortably cover that number. The only other things that I'll mention, this is one of the rare times that because we have a lot more of the states have legal books now, you're able to get some look ahead lines. And I'll mention this now just because, like, a lot of times when I get a lot of my better bets, they're like earlier in the week and we do the pod later and it's tougher to find maybe as much. But next week, quickly, I like Oregon State giving 11.5 at Colorado. If you look at Colorado's results, like, yes, they're better in Boulder, but teams in Oregon State's weight class, like USC, yeah, the final score looks closer, but USC took their foot off the gas. They were beating the shit out of them. Oregon beat the shit out of them. I know it was in Austin, but they would have done the same thing to them. I consider Oregon State up in that weight class, and I think that line's short. Armato likes that actually closer to 15. The other one is took Maryland again. They get Penn State at home. They were getting 12. Yeah, Penn State typically has dominated that series, but I think that's a spot where I kind of look at it almost like the Clemson NC State game, where you have a situation where you're laying 12 with that offense on the road. And Maryland has started to play these big boys a lot closer the last couple of years. I think that's a pretty important game to them for recruiting purposes. So our model made that actually closer to 9. I thought there was a good amount of value past that kind of secondary key of 10. So I took both of those going into next week, but anything else this week, that's a bunch of leans. I would play a lot of stuff live. If anything, I mentioned the props that I ended up taking with Beck, Mertz under on Leary. But yeah, if you're ready with your, no scoop headshots, go ahead and rip it.
Yeah, yeah, I got one. Michigan State plus 7.5 against Minnesota.
I thought about that too. It's so gross, yeah. But as long as they haven't quit, that line is like Minnesota should not be giving 7 to a Big Ten team.
Yeah, yeah. Minnesota shouldn't. Yeah, I don't know how they can't score. Like, they shouldn't be getting over a touchdown.
But, yeah. And I think Sparty can run the ball on them.
Sparty's had some.
What's the total in that game? Is the 40. Total above 40? It is 40 or?
It's 40.
Okay.
I mean, with total 40, I just don't see who the hell is taking Minnesota and giving 7. That's just crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota lost to a really bad Northwestern team. They haven't, like, all of their wins have been close. Michigan State had a game against Rutgers a couple weeks ago where they should have won that game.
Been playing hard and
they played Iowa, tough.
Yeah. So I know that they lost 49-0 to Michigan, but like Michigan's just like, that's what they've been doing to Big Ten teams because they know their plays. So like, in all seriousness, like Michigan's just that much better than them. So like, I was watching a little bit of that. Like, it didn't seem like they quit to me. I didn't love all the cheap shots they were taking. I think that's just honestly a lot of frustration with this season. I'm not condoning it, but you see that from time to time. But yeah, Addison, that one I lean so hard that I'm still considering it. Like, I I'm kind of surprised it hasn't come off a 7. I think people are just worried that they've quit. That's the only thing I think that holds people back.
Yeah. I mean, it is 7.5 right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. What the fuck? It came off 7.
Yeah. Other way. I'm looking at it right now, 7.5.
Dude, there's no way. Like, I don't give a shit. I disagree with that 100%. I almost feel like I'm obligated to take 7.5 now.
Okay. We good on bets here?
I think so.
All right, let's close out. So if we think this is going to be the chaos week, give us an unexpected team to just lose outright on the field. I got one. Florida State. At Wake Forest, sleepy.
Yeah, they lost to him last year.
Just like weird. I don't know.
Yeah, they lost to him last year. I'm looking through real quick.
A Penn State letdown versus Indiana, like a really low scoring game.
0% chance.
Indiana's so bad.
Yeah,
they might be the worst Power 5 team. Yeah, I'm looking through here.
Stanford over Washington?
Oklahoma. No. Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
11 a.m. in Lawrence.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, you know what? That's not a bad one. One more second. I'm just kind of scrolling through here. I mean, you know what? I actually think from all the ones I've looked at, I was going to joke with Steele, or I was going to joke on the pod for Steele and say Pitt, but I think Notre Dame is going to beat their ass. I think Kansas. I wouldn't be shocked if they won that game.
All right. Good stuff. See you guys next week. Good night, everybody.
Ohio against the world.